Everyone, before we get started, I'm Dean Liang. I'm the Chief Information Officer at Holland & Knight. I just want to do a quick poll of the audience. We will tailor the session a little bit depending on whether this crowd is more technical or more business-oriented. So show of hands, who's really more on the tech side of Link? Most people. Who's on the business side? Okay, we'll try to keep that balance. Okay, great. So as I said, I'm the Chief Information Officer at Holland & Knight. I've had 20 years experience in IT, and I what people call a technical CIO. I do know a lot about IT in general. I didn't get into IT because I wanted to be in management. I actually really like the technology. I have my MCSE, my old CNE, if you remember that far back. I was Microsoft Certified Trainer for a little while. And my degree is in electrical engineering. So if you guys want to talk a little bit more about the specific technical business ROIs, happy to jump into that. I've worked in legal, education, manufacturing, and consulting. And just as another organization that I'm a part of is I am a volunteer for the International Legal Technology Association, which is a legal vertical that's dedicated to basically information sharing between firms and such on what we're doing. Specifically, my role there is with communication technologies. Jesse?
I'm Jesse Ortiz. I'm the communications manager at Holland & Knight. So my area includes messaging, email, voice recently. Cut off. Video conferencing and mobile devices. So anything that encompasses that area is in my department. And I've also been in IT for about 20 years.
Great. So the whole message here is the fact that we're a professional services organization. And one of the daunting tasks that we have to deal with is, unlike Microsoft pushing it out or a high-tech company pushing it out, our user base is fundamentally liberal arts based, so they're non-techies. These aren't people that typically live and breathe technology. We have 1,000 attorneys, about 20 offices, both domestic and international, and we're a full-services law firm. Now, one of the unique things about a law firm, if you're not familiar with it, is it's a precedent-based industry. So it's tough to always move things ahead, especially in new technologies and new things, because they're always asking, what are other law firms doing? What's case history? What's precedent? What's all that background behind it before moving forward? And it was initially a challenge in terms of moving Link forward because of that, because we are sort of stuck a little bit in the past. With the legal industry, there's really two key things. There's things that are discoverable, so anything that's on paper, anything that's recorded, anything that's in the courts, and that's words on paper, that's email. And then there's oral communications, which is actually off the record. The sidebars as everybody sees on TV and such. For us, we decided that Link was going to be all on the oral communication side. So even for the IM portions, we don't track, we don't record, and we specifically make note of that it's supposed to be for transactional conversations and such. Our firm, even though we have 1,000 attorneys, very much works in pods and teams. So we have partners and associates that work together, and we also have the attorneys, which is the partners and associates, working with the assistants. It's primarily a 4-to-1 ratio. And this is something that's important when we talk about some of the boss admin functionality, because it's not a 1-to-1 assistant attorney ratio. It's specifically, we have about 4 attorneys for every assistant that works within the firm. In terms of workflow, the majority of the work is done in Outlook, in Word, and in voice communication. So things on the telephone itself. One of the big drivers that we're talking about in terms of why we actually moved to Link was really just to have a single platform for our users to collaborate internally, because we have offices from Asia all the way to the Middle East. So there really isn't a time of day where there isn't an office open somewhere in the world. So there's a lot of need and drive to be able to respond quickly as we look at not only targeting the work to the right expertise within the firm to leverage our size, but also targeting to the appropriate cost center, because we have different offices that have different cost structures based on time. And based on that as well, we also want to have the system be able to communicate well with our clients. We want to be the go-to people that our clients go to in terms of IM or voice escalation in terms of communication. We are a time-based professional services organization, so it's all about the billable hour. So we drive in two things. One, to be more efficient in that billable hour, and to be able to get as much time billed as possible. We bill in 0.1 increments through the hour, so a 0.1 is about 6 minutes. So we can get a client to engage and actually have a conversation with us, regardless of the term of the conversation. It's 0.1. And just using simple math, our typical associate might be $360 an hour. That's $60 right there. It's not uncommon for attorneys to go up to $700, $800 an hour, $120 if we can actually initiate that that communication. So jumping more into the technical aspects.
Sure. So before we looked at deploying Link 2013, we had a lot of technology in the offices still. We had a lot of capabilities that the lawyers could use. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that they could do wasn't really well known or understood how to do it. So they had all these capabilities that they would use a little bit after an announcement perhaps, but it would fall off by the wayside later. And we can go to the next slide here. So we can see here that we had our pre-existing environment had pretty much all the features of unified communications. And we'll just go through it. We're using Avaya for voice. We had an audio conferencing system from SoundPath. It was a hosted solution. We had web collaboration through Adobe Connect. Video was a Polycom system. And we also had IM presence from OCS. So we had all these features, but they weren't together. They were all these dispersed clients. Attorneys really didn't make a lot of use of it because they had to jump between all these tools to do something. So they could be on a phone call. If they wanted to jump to video, they had to hang up the phone call and fire up the Polycom client. If they wanted to do a web presentation, they had to go to a different application, log into it, send a link. So it wasn't a very easy workflow for them to use. And because of this, it just really didn't get used that much. So we can see that even though these solutions were best of breed at many times, you know, very well-known providers, it just wasn't integrated together, so it wasn't where we needed to be. Another problem that we had is that the age of the existing PBX is about 9 years old. So it was something that we had in our minds that we were going to have to replace it eventually, and something we were looking at. And some of the things that we were trying to solve at the same time was issues that were brought to light by different outages we had. So for example, in the instance of Superserve Sandy in the Northeast, we had a PRI outage in our office that lasted a few days. And it just showed that even though our equipment was completely fine, our building had power, we couldn't do anything about it. We were just sitting there waiting for them to restore services. In the meantime, all our phone numbers for our New York office were just busy or ringing to dead air. There was nothing we could do about it. And we were able to have internal calls still, so we could route it within our network and they could make calls out, but still, from the outside, it appeared like we were down. Another example of that same kind of scenario was when we had a local branch failure. So a PBX would go down, and it's something that you can't necessarily remediate very quickly. And if your DIDs are going there, again, we had the same problem, that our phones from the outside world would go down. So a client would call, and we'd miss that chance to have some billable hours there. And the other thing we wanted to do was have the ability to work anywhere. So with our solutions that we had, some of them worked internal only, some of them were available outside. You had to use a VPN client. It just wasn't a very smooth transition for any of the stuff. So we wanted that ability to do it from any device, mobile devices, tablets, and everything else, from wherever they were, so their home or other offices.
And the whole thing is we needed it to be easy. You know, in our firm, iOS devices by far, even though you hear Android devices have the majority of the market share, almost 90% of our devices are iOS devices. Now, this is driven by a couple of things. One is it's a premium device, so there's a certain cachet value in having a premium device, but it's always easy to use. Like, if there's ever a problem, you hit that home button and you get back there. And that's something that we were always fighting with as we started training all these different clients and options and such. And it really didn't make sense. So we decided to jump in and look at the business drivers for upgrading. Now, this may seem counterintuitive, but for us, above all else, we needed the phone system to work like a normal phone system. We needed people to be able to walk up, pick up the phone, dial 9, and make a phone call. Certainly, there's tons of advantages and such that you get from Link in terms of all the phone plus features, as I've coined it. But there's a portion of a demographics, and if you hear the one-third rule, you know, one-third love it, one-third hate it, one-third don't care, that we had to make sure that from a dial tone perspective, that we had that that we had everybody covered, so that at the end of the day, if they choose not to do anything, they can just continue to move ahead. So the cost savings. The traditional PBX model, we were spending over $400,000 a year in just maintenance alone for a traditional PBX system. So it doesn't take long to just work through the ROI to replace it. We're paying maintenance for each of these individual best of breed items from the web conferencing with Adobe Connect. We had per click charges with SoundPass, et cetera. We wanted to refresh the desktop phones. Some of them were up to about 15 years old and such. And based on what I said about the premium device, people want a new shiny phone on their desk. We also got the driver, the fact that people coming in are using more sophisticated technologies. They're used to using FaceTime to say goodbye and goodnight to their family. They're used to using Skype to calling their family. And again, it goes to that demographics. And by all means, it's not age-related at all. It's just the demographics that's used to be able to use this mobile technology. Efficiency and revenue generation is something that I talked about earlier, that's all about the billable hours. So we want to make sure that any lag time is minimized so that people can get on a call, start collaborating, and start billing immediately. And our firm is progressive in that it really understands that technology is really one of the last tools out there where you can actually drive efficiency, productivity, and revenue generation. Those of you that heard me in the keynote earlier today, was we are also embracing the fact that we want consumer-based technologies, assuming they're secure, to be able to drive into the enterprise. So that allows us to do two things. It allows us to minimize the training required to get people up to speed quickly, but the more important thing is we're allowing people to use tools that's already effective in their day-to-day workflow in the enterprise environment. So we're not forcing or teaching them to use something different in the whole work environment. And of course, mobility, that is a huge driver for work-life balance, being able to be accessible after hours and such. And really, this came into its own for Link when we went from 2010 to 2013. We had originally piloted 2010, thought that, you know, on paper it looked good, but it was really 2013 that got the mobility component to where we needed to be. On the mobility side, we've made a conscious decision that we want people to have access to all electronic information they have available in the office, outside the office. And again, this isn't a one-size-fits-all. We really chose the CYOD, choose your own device policy, and it's from a menu. So people, for example, can choose to have a desktop and an iPad. They can choose to have a notebook. They can choose to have a Surface device in lieu of their notebook. Or they can just have a combination there based on that on their spend. On our iPads already, we have a number of applications that run on there, and I'd be happy to show anybody afterwards. But already on our iOS device, we have Citrix, which gives people access to basically anything that's available in the office. But we're also running Hightail, which is a secure replacement to Dropbox for file sharing. We're running our document management system on there so people can actually access documents and pull information off of there. We have DTE Axiom, which is a time and billing software. So again, if you're working remotely, collaborating remotely through Link, you can immediately go in and capture that time that would otherwise be lost. If you're like, well, I'll remember to enter this time later, that never happens. But that's really an efficiency gain there, in that people were finding lost time that just wasn't being entered. There's also a huge drive to be using these mobile devices in the courtrooms, as again, with data connections being somewhat ubiquitous now, to be able to just to pull the huge caches of data on an as-needed basis, as opposed to coming into court with reams and reams of paper and such. Other things that we're doing, everything's managed through MDM, of course. But it's the desire not to give up multiple numbers. Sometimes you're working with opposing counsel. You don't want to give opposing counsel your personal cell phone number. You just want them to be able to call and be able to access you wherever it is that you are. Again, also with ease of number recognition, I think now I finally recognize Jesse's cell phone number, so I will pick up my phone if I see it ringing. But that's a problem. I have about 50 people out in the field, so it's difficult just on first pass to be able to pick up the phone and collaborate. If you think about from a worldwide perspective, The challenge is to try and recognize whether or not that's somebody that you want to collaborate with immediately. With Link, with that driver, you get the five-digit calling. We use five-digit internal calling. You get the name, you get the number display, and that removes one of the barriers in terms of collaboration. The voice over IP capabilities in 2013 really allows us to augment any cellular dead spots, and many of these large office towers and stuff have many dead spots out there, and allows our people to roam and not be tethered in their office or having to forward it to their cell phone. They simply just sit there wherever they are, even at home with Wi-Fi, and they can actually have their local office number ringing. Now, one thing that we've worked on is one of the challenges that we found when we've been working with mobility is mobility gets a little bit of a bad rap. Sometimes we hear, using a different analogy, people say that Citrix sucks. Well, you know, Citrix generally doesn't suck. Citrix is a very good platform out there, but the problem is it's not understanding the underlying transport as to why it's not working from a connectivity perspective. So we're developing a little application where it's a connectivity dashboard, where it's green good, red bad, and it just goes and it shows you for each of the particular services that I mentioned before, whether or not you have enough bandwidth and whether the latency is low enough for that communication to work. If it's green, you press a button, it launches, and it goes. If it's red, it just doesn't work because that just cuts down another one of those items where people can misperceive that the problem is actually the technology. So talking about the ROI, Jesse actually found a good third-party PBX maintenance people, which actually dropped our maintenance by $200,000 per year and made it a little bit harder for us to justify Link to deploy, but that just really pushed our ROI from 2 years out to about 4 years, so it still made sense. And we were just replacing dial-tone with that savings. This is not talking about all the additional benefits out there. Our PBX maintenance was particularly high because our offices were formed through a series of mergers about 10 years ago, so there was all this local PBX infrastructure and such. And once we started phasing that out, and we'll talk about centralized versus decentralized in a moment, those cost savings really come in there. The other hard savings that's not listed on here is that by utilizing Microsoft-based technology, by using Microsoft servers and such, we're able to use our DR and BC infrastructure that we use for the rest of our environment in terms of a VM-based environment, using replication, using NetApps to replicate the data. It was easy at that point to lump it all together and make that a critical tier one application. Productivity gains, I've already talked about, so I'm just gonna flip the page. Jesse?
So Link versus Cisco, we spent a lot of time looking at these two solutions. Really, at Cisco, we were pretty close to actually deploying it.
We had POs on my desk. This is how close it came.
We did. So we ended up doing a Cisco Tamberg video implementation, which was kind of even driving us more that way. We replaced our Polycon system was probably 9-10 years old. It was very, very dated. And once we did that, it seemed like it made a lot of sense for us to just go ahead and do the phone piece with them as well. The phones are very mature. They have all the features that, you know, we had that we were used to and things that we didn't even need. So from that perspective, it was a very good fit. But when we started looking at the desktop side of it is when it still started not quite fitting what we wanted. They do have all these applications. And just to preface this was back in 2010 or 2011, really, so it's a little bit of time has passed since we did this comparison, but they had different clients for everything. So they had an IM client, they had a separate video client. If you wanted to go to a conference, a web conference, you had to escalate it into WebEx. So you were still using all these different things. They tried to integrate them together, but you know it's still not just one simple client that you're staying in within the whole time. And also on the back end, it required a lot of more complex infrastructure to support the same thing. So the user didn't see that, but it was still there for administratively to deal with. The other thing we looked at was the version of Cookie Link. So we thought, well, these phones are great. We really like Link. We already have it deployed for IAM Presence. What if we just integrate these two? And that's the idea that Cisco has once you weren't too happy with their other solution. And you know, it just felt like it was band-aging things too much for us. It was it works, but there's too many times where it's confusing. Like you're not sure if you're starting a Link call or if you're starting a Cisco call, and you can end up getting yourself just into a strange predicament sometimes. And it was just something that we thought would really frustrate users. So we took that one off the table as well. And the other concern we had with it was Cisco's keeping up with Microsoft releases. So when the next version of Link came out, how long was it going to take until we could adopt it once they supported it? So we just didn't want to go down that route and risk putting ourselves into this another mixed architecture again. Cost is something that is obvious. So we have a EA with Microsoft, so Link belonged to us already, versus Cisco, we'd have to go and purchase all the licenses, which can get expensive and a little bit confusing. There's so many different options, at least at the time there were. I think they've simplified that as well now. But it was something else that we looked at when we were doing it.
And really, one of the key differences between Cisco and Link is Cisco, I mean, they've been on the scene for 10 plus years now. So 10 plus years ago, it was all about the phone. It was Cisco came in and they tried to take out the PBX vendors based on VoIP on a phone-based experience. Once we really started driving into it and we looked at the comparative of features and such is, sure, Cisco had feature parity with all the PBX functionality, but once we started moving into that whole IAM realm with either Cookie Link, or once we started looking at how do we integrate that with Office and SharePoint, and how do we get voice, not just voice, but video collaboration, whiteboard collaboration, web collaboration, that all forked back out again to almost like a best of breed like solution. Didn't give that single interface that we really wanted. So when we drove and we looked at Link, the experience was completely different in that it was all centered around the desktop first. You had all the plus functionality there, and they started to push out to the phone-based features out there where you got we got dial tone and conferencing all on a particular phone. So the pros and cons that we looked through, the single pane of glass was critical for us. And really, we saw the evolution of feature and functionality with Microsoft Link moving much faster than with the Cisco client. The tight integration with Office is critical. But even today, I was thrilled when we heard about the Skype integration with Link, because that's really what our Latin American and our Middle East offices are pushing for, because that's simply how they work with their clients locally. But one of the greatest requests that I actually get for Link domestically is they simply want to use Skype to call home and say goodnight to their kids. And, you know, if that's a quality of life item that I can give them so that they can actually continue to work and bill more hours, absolutely, we'll get that to them. Some of the problems with Link that we're working through is that the functionality is not fully featured in terms of the handsets. I'd say it's about 85%. And really, there's only a couple of items that we've actually had to give up. But it's now at a maturity level where we can actually adopt it in the enterprise. Some of the PBX features aren't easily done. And as opposed to being done centrally with a PBX system, it's actually done at the user level. And you know, from a concierge level of support where things are just taken care of for you when you call the help desk, it was a little bit of a shift in focus in terms of, well, let me talk you through how you actually do these changes, helping people understand that the power is you can change this around as it makes sense for you. In fact, one of the functionalities for the traditional PBX systems that the only workaround was if you worked in two or three offices, was you had two or three different phone numbers so that people can actually call you at those locations. One of the things that we've been working with right now is because there's a single number reach functionality, we've now had to go back and untrain our users to help them understand that this is actually a benefit now. This is like you having a cell phone number that will ring anywhere. You should give up all these different numbers and just be accessible through a single interface. The UI has, from a technical perspective, it works, but from an end user perspective, I wish there was a little bit more contextual awareness that if you're in a conference call, the screen's maybe not a ribbon, I'm a huge fan of the ribbon, but something that changes contextually so you can then go in and be able to select and make a conference call, add another attendee, escalate to video versus having to jump around and find things. I think one thing that I didn't know is when you're in a conference call, if you wanted the dial pad, I always went back to the main interface to hit the little dial pad number. But Jesse told me today, if you actually hover over the mute button, the dial pad comes up. It's a little bit counterintuitive, but the functionality is certainly there. the handset functionality is certainly catching up. but it's developed primarily by third parties, and it does lag the desktop client in terms of features and functionality, and they're working hard to catch up, but it's still not where we would like it to be. It's certainly very usable, and it works. And there's just the perception issue of dial tone. There's just that whole, I don't want to be rebooting my phone once a week because I need to reboot my desktop once a week. And that's just an awareness issue that, you know, it's the health of the computer. Certainly, if you're running other applications and stuff that are unstable, you do need to reboot your computer periodically. But since we've deployed the latest firmware on some of our phones, we haven't had any issues with that at all.
So since voice is such an important thing to us, we issued a formal RFP to several integrators of ours to propose an installation process for us to help us deploy Link. It's obviously something that we could have looked at doing ourselves, but we felt that it's such a complicated installation. It's only a one-time thing where we're going to get the system up that it didn't make sense for us to go try and get training for our people and go to the learning pains of trying to get it installed. So we issued this out to quite a few of ours. And the key thing that we wanted in there really was, first, as Dean mentioned, the reliability had to be there in the design. The voice had to be up. Our current PBX, as long as something didn't change to it, was very, very solid. So a change could be something as simple as a reboot, unfortunately. But if you left it alone, nothing happened to it. It really just kept running. The other thing that we were trying to do, as Dean mentioned, had to be easy to use. So trying to build that into the design as much as possible. Ability to mimic most of the features and use in the PBX, that's something that kind of caught us up for a while. So we kept looking at all the things that the PBX could do, all the features that it had in the back end, all these complicated routes that some people would put into use, and even some things that we weren't using. And we were thinking, well, how can we do this in Link? And then we realized, taking a step back, you know, just because we could do it doesn't mean that we want to keep doing it, that's the best solution for us. So what we had to do was just evaluate really the core reasons for why we were doing it. So the multiple phone numbers was a perfect example. Years ago, we did that because it was the only option. But today, now, we don't have to do that. So we're just trying to push back for it and really do what makes more sense for the users. One of the things that we noticed with some of the integrators is that they really focused on the platform of Link. So they seemed that they could do a great job, the reliability, they could do the design, they could get the system up and running. But they didn't focus too much on the user experience of it. They were really just wanting to come do a Link deployment, show people how to use the client, and not really taking into account what they were doing before so much. So they did all these things on the phone before, how they did it, and even if it doesn't have a direct translation to the new one, you know, what are the workarounds? How can we do this? How can we build it into it instead of just waiting for it all to happen and then people getting upset about the experience once they got the new system? So that was something that we really wanted to focus on. The other thing, so the ability to execute, as I mentioned, that's something that we felt a lot of them could do. Understanding the business was the other thing, as I mentioned, that they had to understand this whole attorney-secretary relationships so they could really understand how important it was to us that had to work very well since it was something that just happens constantly in our organization. And the vendor we selected really did focus on that. They had excellent technical abilities. But they also had a very strong focus on the user experience, the change management, and then the user adoption of it. So they followed up and they followed these processes to make sure that the system was a success as far as being accepted and used as well. And while that's not the norm we see a lot of times in IT, because we look at technology, we just want to get the technology out there, all the cool things. We don't look at how it really affects users or what they want. And something so key like voice, it's something they're so used to having that's just, you know, a phone, pick it up, there should be a dial tone. If it's complex to use, they're not going to want anything to do with it.
And we find most often not that if projects fail, it's because people aren't addressing the user and change management issues in terms of that adoption principle. If you just deploy it and hope that they'll adopt it, they may not. But if you focus on the change management and really help build the business case as to how it's going to help their workflow and their practice, that always leads to a successful deployment.
So along the way, there was a lot of decisions that we had to make, so we'll just briefly go over some of the stuff. The pools that the users are associated with, there's different options. You can have them split up. We have two data centers today. So do we have users live in both data centers, or do we have one that's just passive waiting? We're in the middle of some other projects as well, moving one of the data centers. So in the process of just keeping everybody live in one, and then the other one's going to be there for a failover. We may readdress that later so we can have more of a balanced view and make sure that we know everything's working, but until we get the other one up to the point where we're done making changes in it, this made more sense for us. Installing load balancers for failover. So this is something that our VAR brought to our attention, that there was two options, load balancers, or you could use DNS to load balance. DNS is obviously a free setting, and load balancers, we didn't have them in place, so we had to purchase them. But it actually brought some of the availability to us. So federation, as Dean mentioned, to Skype is something that was really important to us. And if we didn't have load balancers, the failover, so if we had a failover scenario, it wasn't very easy for us to recover from it and keep federation up. Everything else would go over, but that one piece could break for a while, and it wasn't something that we wanted to have down since we're trying to really push it out and have people use it for business eventually, with the video especially. One of the other things that we had looked at doing was integrating with Avaya. So since the phones in that system really did everything we needed at the time, and they were ahead of the Link phones that we were looking at, we thought, well, maybe we can just use these phones, we can integrate voice with Link and have both systems together. And that was something that, you know, our VAR helped us with. We got it up and running, but really, in the end, we realized it's just a very complicated installation. We're managing two PBXs going forward. We have maintenance on both, and it really just didn't make a lot of sense to us. And there's a lot of situations that, even though it did work, that it complicated things, and it didn't get into a better experience. So if they were on the phone, somebody could look at their status in Link, and it just shows them available, but they were on their Avaya phone, so it could get complicated. Session border controllers. So that's basically a firewall for the SIP connection that you're using to the outside world. And it's not necessarily 100% required in every situation, but for regulations, just for security, for peace of mind, having something there between your environment and the outside world seemed like something that we really wanted to have in place from a security perspective. And it also gives you some other features. So some of that integration with Avaya, we were able to do that by having these extra pieces between the two systems to help us integrate it. And it also helps with when you're looking at other carriers. So if a SIP provider isn't certified with Link, but they're certified with your SBC, it gives you the opportunity to have a wider range of them out there, because especially a couple of years ago, there wasn't very many at all who were certified to work with Link. So it's a nice piece to have in the mix. We actually only went with Sonos. So those are the two that we actually had kind of rounded down to. You know, there's a lot of options out there and just things that made sense from it. We looked at different aspects of it. So like their support models, the carriers that they integrate with, and just a whole range of things there. And we felt that Sonos fit better for our organization. Yes. SIP versus PRIs. So today we are still using PRIs, but we want to move towards a SIP environment. We feel that SIP is really, you know, if you were doing a fresh installation from scratch, that's the way you would go. Even though PRIs are more prevalent, it's really what we see as the future. There's some things that we had to take into account. So obviously, once you're doing that, you have more network utilization. You have to make sure you have all the proper QoS in place. And then there's other things that we're getting from it, such as capabilities to forward phones from the provider. So in a worst case scenario, like if we had a complete outage for whatever reason, our data centers were down or somebody made a change that took things down, we can pre-stage it so that it can forward to a cell phone someplace or to individual cell phones. And that's something that we talked to when we were looking at providers. You know, do you have these capabilities? Can we give you this Excel sheet, basically, or CSV with everybody's number, and we can build this table and have it stage ready to go? That's one of the things that we were looking at. It also gives you a lot of flexibility in things. So in the case of that Superstorm Sandy, for example, we were waiting for the carrier to be able to forward our numbers. And they eventually did do it before all the services were restored, but it still took them to forward the main number, I think, 2 or 3 days. Until we had that reception number even go anyplace. And in a SIP world, you know, that would have been the ability for us to be able to go and do it, because it was just really
from the providers a matter of queue. They had so many requests to do it, they were just very behind, and it took days for them to make that happen. So that's another reason that we're looking for moving to SIP. Some of the caveats with it, or the things that we noticed have concerns about, is faxing. That's the biggest one. We were initially trying to deploy or looking at an IP faxing solution. So as we were talking to them, we were making sure that they could support that. And as we were talking to carriers and more importantly, and other people who had actually deployed it, we found that they felt like a very good success rate was 85 to 90%. They said if you were getting that success rate, that you were doing great. Don't expect any more than that. And when we heard that, we were like, okay, well, wait a minute, that's not gonna work for us, because we have a lot of really long faxes, unfortunately. So it's not, we didn't wanna make it a worse experience for people, obviously. So what we're doing is, you know, we're gonna keep a PRR in a data center and just forward those phone numbers in all the offices, because we have local fax numbers every place, to a centralized PRI and be able to keep that same analog experience, the reliability of it, the success rate should stay the same, but we'll still be able to really reduce how much infrastructure we have out there, because we're not gonna have anything in the offices doing this, and we can just have a single PRI there to handle everything. Phones, so we spent, again, this started in 2010, so at the time, we were mainly focusing on Polycom and SNOM. Those seemed to be the strongest players at the time. And then, as I mentioned, we also, with our integration, we started looking at trying to keep the Avaya phones in there. And we really were trying to mimic all these same features that we had with Avaya at the time. And, you know, we started thinking, well, you know, what do we really need from it? And what can we get, and how can we make it work for our business and for our needs? And we went back to that initial goal, is that we just had to really replace the dial tone and then have those features that were required for the business to start with. Some of the stuff that we focused on with the phones were the link optimized versus qualified. You know, initially we were trying all these different optimized handsets, and we realized, well, these all have the same feature set. You know, the hardware's a little bit different, but it's all the same phone internally or from an OS level, so you're not getting anything differently. So then we started looking at the qualified handsets, and they definitely had more features, but there was some more caveats with them. So, you know, we started looking at support models. So it's not a Microsoft OS, so you had to worry about, you know, how involved is the maker in supporting you if you get into a problem? How's their turnaround time for bug fixes? Features, they seem to leapfrog each other with what they have first. So depending when you're looking at it and what you need to have happen, you know, one might be ahead of the other. So it was something that we spent a lot of time with. In the end, we ended up with the Polycom VVX series of phones. I think that's on the next slide there. So the CX series of phones, you know, it's a very mature phone. It's a very nice experience. Unfortunately, it doesn't have any of the BOSS admin functionality that we needed, so it kind of took it off the table for us. We also were unsure of the roadmaps for it. How much is really going to, is Microsoft really going to keep developing on it? Because they don't seem to be releasing a lot of new features for it, and we haven't really heard too much news about them coming out with a new version of it or anything. So it seems to us, you know, we that they're really starting to rely more on the makers of qualified sets, and these are the guys that are really looking, have really far out roadmaps with a lot of features to try and start mimicking what's really out there in the PBX phones and replacing what we have with Avaya. So we feel it has a really good long-term potential for us in the environment. The Polycom CX3000 phones, so that one is running the Link OS, obviously, but it's a very simple phone to use. So a user can just go up to it, dial a number, and make it work. So they don't even realize they're using Link, usually, because it's just a phone to them. We actually have a number in production. We had an office remodel, and we, instead of putting more money into buying the other ones, we deployed the Link phones to it, and it just works. People don't know that they're using Link at that point, which is actually a nice sales pitch to them, because when you hear Link as a voice solution, some of them, or Microsoft as a voice solution, they're like, what is this that you're talking about? You know, is this really something that we should be looking at? And you can tell them, well, actually, you know, you've been using it already in the conference rooms. You know, have you had problems with it? And so far, we haven't had a single complaint about it. We just had switched them in. We didn't have any training and no announcements, just put them there, and people have been using them.
And we've had 32,000 minutes of usage of these conference phones already. So this is not a small little pilot. These are heavily used. People don't even know. I mean, in fact, if you put a piece of black tape over that little link light, then people would have no idea that it was a link-based phone.
Yep, and that was just in the last 30 days that we had that much traffic over them. So it's definitely something that seems like it's really stable for us. And then going back into the video conferencing, the Tamberg versus Polycom video integration. Our Tamberg system, we had just put it in almost 3 years ago at this point.
And that was because we were also marching down the Cisco path. That's where we thought we were going to go.
Right. Yeah, so you know, if we had known we would be able to deploy Link, the Polycom probably would have made more sense. It has a better integration story with it. But we were able to get it up and running. So we had it integrated with 2010 for a while. Link 2013 came out. We got migrated to it, and it broke it. So again, it showed us the concerns of having too many things integrated from different companies, because we had to wait months, quite a few months, until Cisco released updates that allow us to put the integration back together. And then once they released it, we actually had to pay for it this time. So it cost us money when we weren't really planning on that happening to us. That's still a struggle for us, honestly, because the Cisco systems, we have a bridge. It's very expensive port-wise to use. We're able to dial into it with Link, but how many people can we really open it up to without just killing ourselves with costs of ports? And it's also something that we're having a hard time gauging how much it would get used. So even to announce it out to people, we don't want to make a huge investment and then not get used. We don't want to announce it to people and then have a lot of people wanting to use it and then not having the capacity and turning them away, because both of them ends up with a bad user experience. So that was a reason that we were actually pretty excited today when we heard the announcement of the keynote about the video integration. So we're looking forward to seeing that and hoping that it can help us along the way there as well.
Hoping they don't charge us for it as well.
Yes.
Let's keep going.
So our design blueprint here. So initially, we're trying to follow the configuration that we have with Avaya. We have PRIs in the local offices. We're deploying Link SBAs, Survivable Branch Appliances there. Those PRIs are there, so the office can just run alone, standalone situation. And we also have the SBC in our data center that does the integration to Avaya, and then eventually we'll have a SIP trunk into it that will be migrating all the numbers to and having centralized. So there was a few reasons that we ended up doing this way first. You know, we looked at just initially deploying SIP with the Link system and then migrating users to that. But in the interest of change management, and this is something that our VAR really pushed for, is that we should do it in steps. We shouldn't try and make too many changes at one time. So we'll do the Link migration first, prove that it's working, prove that it's stable, prove that we have good quality with it, and then we can take that next step and migrate it to SIP, and that way we have more controls. We know if we have a problem, when it happened, what introduced it, instead of having all these things happen at one time and then really pulling our hair out trying to fix it. And again, that's focusing on the user experience to make sure that we don't hurt them trying to make all these changes at the same time. In our data center, so we made this decision to deploy all the servers in a virtualized environment, as Dean mentioned, so that helps follow our DR plan. So the virtual machines, if something happens, you know, we have the machines backed up, we could recover them. We could move them to another data center if we had to, and rebuild them a lot faster than if we were starting from scratch with a machine. The SBCs we talked about, and then the SIP lines will be to our data center, and eventually we'll have everything centralized there. So in this case, all these SBAs that we have deployed, we will eventually not have them in the office, and everything will be routed back to our data center. And again, this is really to help us with those disaster recovery scenarios, such as the Sandy or a PBX failure in an office. If something happens to that office, you know, we still have the ability from the SIP carrier, at worst case, to just send that phone traffic someplace else if we need be. So we're not no longer dependent on that one location being up. Users could be, you know, if something happened to the office, they could be home working in Link. They could have their number there. Everything would be as normal for them.
and just it's a sidebar. We're really pushing for our offices to not actually have any data in them at all. We want to centralize everything in the data center. It's a part of our DR and BC plan. We have notebooks that connect in through direct access straight into the data center. We have Citrix servers directly in the data center. So the fastest performance is to go directly to the data center. Our goal in the offices is just to have an AD controller for authentication, a file and print server primarily for hosting print and such, and keeping all data off of there so that in the event of a local office failure, there is no loss of operations.
Yeah, people can get into Citrix and it's like nothing ever happened if they go someplace else. So continue on to it. This is more of a line to what we want to see at the end state. So we want to have the SIP trunks centralized to our two data centers. The branch resiliency, so, you know, it sounds kind of a little bit funny looking at it because we don't have anything in the branches, but, you know, there's different ways to look at it, and what we're doing is centralizing everything, so we already have our data and data there and services there, as Dean mentioned. We don't keep things in the local office, so that WAN connection to the data center is very important for everyone in those offices. If that goes down, today they would have phones, but that's about it. They wouldn't be able to do anything else on their computers. So that being the case, there was really a strong point for us to make that more redundant and move the voice central. So we're deploying a second MPLS network, different providers, so different points of entry to the building, just as different as we can. So we have a very high chance of never losing the connections to the office. And we looked at other things. We looked at having just internet connections with a VPN backup in every office. We even talked about that call forwarding from the SIP provider being the worst case, so if it can't get into it, you know, we could have it fail over. But in the end, because we were making this drive to move everything centralized and keep things out of the office, it really made sense to just keep that connection as reliable as possible and be able to take care of it, take advantage of that for the voice as well. The international offices, they're gonna follow a different model, obviously, so there's the challenges of having different services in each of those locations. The phone numbers, obviously, we need to have local numbers there, so we can't deliver those to the US. We have to have something in the office. And so we'll be doing that SBA model, basically, that we had initially in each of those offices and having connection back to the US. Just a sidebar with it, you know, we have these offices even in the UAE, and we were initially very concerned about what call quality would be like over that much of latency and that distance. And we actually deployed some IP phones with our old system, with our Avaya system as well. And we were very surprised that it was actually not bad. It was very acceptable. Every once in a while, this was over the internet, not a dedicated link, you would hear something, a little clip or something, but it wasn't to the point where they found it unacceptable in any means. You know, they realized it's an international call to the other side of the world, so it was very, very well received. And the fact that they knew that they didn't have to pay long distance for making those phone calls really offset any of those little things that they saw happening. So they realized, you know, I'm no longer billing all this time for it. It's just a free call for me at this point. So the concerns that we still do have around it is around monitoring and external support SLAs. So with that PBX model that we have, you know, we know it's very mature. We have a third party monitoring the system 24/7, as Dean mentioned, and they have spare parts for our PBX stored on our site. They have an SLA that is very strong, so if you have an outage, you know, they're supposed to be on site and resolving that for us very quickly. And we were initially thinking with Link, you know, well, we need to make something like that happen as well. And we started thinking, you know, we have the Microsoft Premier support. Is that something good enough for us for monitoring? Are we just gonna use something like MOM or Operations Manager or some other third party ourselves to monitor it? There's some dedicated Link products as well that we were looking at. So we haven't quite decided which way we're going with that. But something that we did think of with the scenario is, you know, with that PBX model, we had that maturity and all these things around it, but do we really need it with Link as much as we did with that scenario? You know, we're just not sure there. With the PBXs, it was specialized hardware. It's not something that we could do ourselves a lot of times because it required licensing and just things that we just didn't have access to ourselves. So we're just weighing those options still.
And that's really where, from a virtualized environment, that's, again, the power that we see of leveraging that fundamental infrastructure, that we're not storing specialized parts or specialized hardware anywhere. As long as we have the fundamental infrastructure as a service running, we can run this, run our own SLAs. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about security, And I want to thank everyone for voting that this should be more technical than not, because that meant instantly that Jesse was doing most of the talking, which is awesome. So thank you for that. So from a security perspective, we had to break down a few barriers there. So, you know, if you don't know, Link itself is actually highly secure. It uses full TLS in encryption end-to-end. And even when the integration with Skype uses full TLS encryption. So that's actually way more secure than a phone call, because you remember phone calls, if I don't know how old everyone is in the room, but if you remember Charlie's Angels back in the day, they used to always climb a phone pole and tap in the line to listen to the conversation. Can't do that with Link. In fact, it was actually a pleasant surprise for me to be able to go and present it to our security team and our general counsel to talk about how using Link will actually give us greater security out there as well. But the thing is that with Federation, with presence and such, we actually had to turn on enhanced privacy, which actually by default didn't share your presence with people. When we first enabled that internally, this is before we actually started federating internally, we just had open security. And that was very powerful in that you could easily see whether somebody was available on the phone or not. But two drivers actually pushed us to turn on the enhanced privacy. One is that attorneys are somewhat private, and they didn't necessarily want somebody in the New York office to be able to see if they're in the LA office, if they're in the office yet working or not. But the greater issue was that if you left the left it with open security, then an average Joe out there with a Skype or a Link connection would be able to see if the CEO was available, if the COO was available. So one of the features that I was kind of hoping that they would announce at the Microsoft at the Link conference this time around was the ability to actually have two different security settings. One for internal, where we actually by default would want open security, and enhanced security for external. So you actually have to pick and choose as to what people got to see. From a high level, Link has passed all their security reviews. Being a law firm with healthcare clients, banking clients, et cetera, we had to actually hit the high water mark in terms of HIPAA, High Tech Act, PII, PCI, all that ilk out there. It's passed. We can talk about it in specifically if you wanted to know details after the fact. We do. We are federated externally now, and we actually have a pop-up message that by default shows up that says that while Holland and Knight doesn't record any instant messaging internally, if you're collaborating with the external party, the messages could be recorded. Almost like the same disclaimer you see from any law firm when you communicate with them on email. So the marketing plan, how do we actually push this out? We really changed the focus. You heard us talk about a few times how there's that certain sort of almost stigma that Link with IM is like it's something that my kids use. It's not an enterprise functional system. Well, we pushed all that aside by doing two things. One, we stopped talking about the Link phone system, and we're saying this is a new phone system that happens to integrate with Link. We started pushing out the conference phones, which actually just had that functionality. And people ask, well, why does this integrate with Link? And then we'd be like, it's actually Link. But the whole thing is that we also started building a buzz with the new features. We really went on a marketing campaign to create the awareness of the functionality that people would get in terms of being able to have audio conferencing, whiteboarding, ad hoc collaboration, the ability to do internal five-digit dialing on your phone number and such. And we did it in such a way for two reasons. One, we knew that we were going to have problems as we moved off of our old PBX system. It's a fact of life. You know, you just need to accommodate for it, deploy it, and we had a rollback plan where, you know, our existing PBX offices, we had a hybrid. So we picked the offices that only had PBX phones. That really allowed us to plug in these VoIP-based phones and have both systems working at the same time, so that even from a cutover perspective, and this is virtual now, but it's just you literally unplug the PRI from the old switch, plug it into the new switch, everything working, great, doesn't work, and plug it back in. Easy fail forward, fail back, so that again, we were able to build that comfort level for the people. In fact, with the Sonos gateways, we just do it virtually. We didn't even have to make any changes there. And again, we focused on dial tone replacement. And even though that's the most archaic feature, that's what our users demanded the most. And then we focus on the phone plus functionality afterwards. And that's the reason why we chose Link. But people only had to use that functionality if they chose to. And by also building that buzz and that goodwill, we had that goodwill to know that this is why we're changing something so core as their normal dial tone, to give them all the functionality that came after the fact. So where are we now, current status?
So currently, we have our SBAs deployed to the initial offices. We have the integration with Avaya, and we have the ability in those in the initial offices to enable somebody for Link, and it takes their phone, and they can be a Link user. We don't have the office completely migrated yet. We have it in a pilot mode. We have users actually throughout the whole firm in a pilot mode. And we're looking, hopefully, in the next couple weeks, we'll have that first one under our belt. As we mentioned, we have the CX3000 phones deployed in production in some offices. We were going with the VVX series phones from Polycom. And that was something interesting there. So the VVX400, you know, is one of their lower-end phones. They have the 500 and 600 series as well. And there's some things that we actually really liked about the 600. It had the ability to have Bluetooth. You know, the cost differential wasn't that much of a problem for us. But the touchscreen for us just wasn't as easy to use as we were hoping it would be. And going back to Dean's point about everything being easy to use, somebody who's really used to just a normal phone, having the touchscreen there, sometimes you accidentally call somebody that you didn't mean to if you bump it. And it just wasn't a really good user experience for us. So some organizations, you know, may appreciate it more or adapt to it more. But for us, you know, we really wish there was a higher end button phone that we could find that would integrate, because, you know, that'd be really a good driver for us, having more features but having the same hard buttons. And that's actually what we were doing with Cisco. We were looking at one of their higher phones, but not a touchscreen, because of the same kind of issues in our environment. We just didn't really like it. And, you know, some of our goals going forward is, once we start this migration, we really want to push to try and get it through it as quickly as possible. Because, you know, if we have it integrated with the Avaya, we have a call back and forth, but there's still things that could get confusing for people. So if they call somebody, they call a contact in Link, you know, they can end up calling the person's computer instead of calling their phone, and it, you know, frustrates them. And it's a training issue while we're in that stage, but just things that we're trying to get through as quickly as possible so we don't have that happen. Another thing that we're still missing, unfortunately, is the intercom feature. So some offices care about that more than others. So again, you know, our VAR is helping us with that, to look at different ways to work around that, you know, whether it's a workflow issue of making a phone call or just making sure they know to use IM when they're in the training session. So this is how you can communicate back to them if you're trying to do something with them. So just awareness of everything that we have and that user acceptance is what we're driving for.
So feedback, what do people like right now? Universal access on multiple devices. I personally carry an Android phone, an iPad, and a Surface tablet, and I'm logged onto all those devices, and sometimes it just drives me crazy when the phone rings, because it just rings my head off. But it works, and it works well. The 5G dialing that I talked about, the ability to augment poor cellular coverage, or even Wi-Fi only devices. My iPad is Wi-Fi only, but I can still make and receive phone calls on it over Wi-Fi because of the Link client. Audio conference, when you initiate an audio conference, you get a full dashboard of everyone that's connected, whether it's their Link name or the phone number that they've dialed in and on. That's very powerful, because from a confidentiality and privilege perspective, it's important for our attorneys to be able to see who's on the phone, who's talking, especially with the large conferences and such. And it's interesting that now that functionality is available, people are now moving out of the video conferencing rooms and actually going into the audio conferences, because they are able to tell, oh, is that George or is that Fred? You can actually see who's actually speaking there. Easy to create a collaboration appointment. It's just a simple button when you're making an appointment in Link. You have all the information there. The other side can just click on it and be connected. Better together over internet, over Ethernet, excuse me. The ability to click to call on your phone has been very powerful. And then one interesting thing is, even though more people are moving to audio conferencing and such, the video calling is something that people are commenting now that they're pushing to do, to ensure that there's engagement in the conversation on the other end, so that people aren't checking their email or otherwise distracted. What are the user concerns? Attendant call pickup. You know, and this was one of the issues as to why we didn't start deploying the Link phone system until we had the handsets to the level of maturity that it is now, in that when you have the 4-to-1 ratio, if you're one assistant and you're doing something on your on your desktop versus your computer, and your computer locks itself because we have the security that does that, all of a sudden the phone rings, you have to control delete, you have to enter your 6-digit alphanumeric password, you have to have the screen unlocked, you have to flip to the link screen in order to be able to figure out who's calling whom and pick it up. That was initially a concern that we're now addressing with being able to have the buttons just there's flash. Voicemail is being diverted to a cell phone voicemail client. A little bit of a concern, there's a training issue. We want to make sure that voicemails go only to a firm controlled device and not the home voicemail system or what have you, where we lose control and possibly have some confidentiality issues. Call quality, I think I talked about it before in terms of the underlying transport and such. There's also the issue in that, you know, when you're making a VoIP call, it's a data connection. It's not a voice-based connection. So if you're using Verizon as an example, currently they're using their CDMA network for actual for the data component, and then their voice network is split apart. So you may have great voice quality, but your data connection may not be as good. So there's some frustration with the users to understand why a VoIP call isn't working well and why a voice call is working well. There's also the issue where if somebody calls in on your regular phone number when you're on a linked data call, it actually drops the linked call because that's what takes the priority. And again, with the Verizon network as the example, it's a completely different network, so it actually drops your data connection altogether when you're on the phone. The link UI could be better. I think I alluded earlier to some contextually aware interface would actually be nice. You know, I think two examples is, you know, I federated with some peers and some other law firms. And I think it took us about 10 minutes to initiate a group video ad hoc call just by clicking around to figure out where the buttons were. What was your example with the trainers the other day?
So we had some trainers looking at Link, just looking at the plans for it. And they were trying to figure out how to merge a call together. And one of the trainers had come to me and he said, we just spent 10 minutes trying to figure out how to merge a call together and we didn't find it. So, you know, I showed him on my desktop how to do it, and he goes, oh, it's very easy, but he's like, my goodness, I would not have found that myself. You know, we tried to find it ourselves, and three of them didn't, so it's really just not as intuitive as you'd hope.
But it's getting there, and I took the opportunity in the green room to mention that to Gurdeep, so hopefully that'll come out in the next feature there. In terms of the handsets, I think they're really 85% there. I mean, from the stance for our purposes, and again, this is unique to professional services for us, is it's ready for us to start deploying there. The loss of functionality such as the intercom, it's coming back in a future release, and really the benefits now outweigh the cons in terms of moving forward with the deployment. But there are challenges.
So some of the stuff that we've been looking at as a challenge is a learning curve. So, you know, we have a voice engineer. He's been doing voice for 20-plus years. It's a huge change. So, you know, it's still voice there, but now it's all IP. And even though he was doing IP voice with our old Avaya system, it's completely different. And it becomes, you know, a mixture of being a Link admin and a voice engineer at the same time, really, to have a good understanding of it. So being able to make sure that we plan for training of the admins and that they have a really good understanding of how to keep this thing going once it's deployed in our environment is one of the things we're concerned about. Applying voice level change control to Link. So again, in our PBX environment, it was very structured, very, very controlled what we did to it. We didn't go around making a lot of changes. And in Windows environment, a lot of times, you know, a lot of people can have access to it versus in the PBX, it was very limited. You know, just the people who really, really knew what they were doing could do anything to it. And with the Link in Windows, it's a concern. So you really have to have that organizational maturity there to have a very strong change control when you're doing something to it that you don't break voice at that time. So it's another thing that we're looking at. And it also goes back to the support options. So how are we going to get that support that we had before if we do decide that we need it? And what is the route we'll follow for that? The reception console, so, you know, we were looking at trying to use the soft console for our receptionist. We've had mixed reviews from some of them. Some of them think it's okay. I don't think anybody's been like, hey, this is great. I can't wait to use it. They have those big old consoles today. So it's a challenge. You know, we're going to try and get them to do that. But if not, you know, we're going to start look at some of the third-party options and seeing if that might make more sense if we have to go down that route. But initially, we are going to try and just keep that Microsoft-supported one and try and use that in our environments. And then the last one was the video adoption, which hopefully, you know, we talked about already, but we're hoping now after today's announcement that there'll be something there that'll help alleviate that for us, because again, we don't want to go and spend a bunch of money on something that we aren't going to need later, and that would actually give us a better experience possibly, because it'll just be native again to Microsoft instead of having these other third parties integrate in.
I'm going to talk a little bit quickly so we have some time for some QAA. Outstanding issues. So E911 service and certification. You'd be amazed how companies really freak out when a law firm asks, will you put this in writing, in terms of certifying that it will work and that the ambulance will actually show up at the right location. We still haven't gotten a full sign-off on how we're going to address that. Help desk call routing system is something that we hope to maybe find a provider here at the show to help us out with. Really, one of the great user frustrations is that the call display on our existing handsets, it's for techies. This number here, 813-555-1212, is regular call display. This is literally how it shows up on the phones right now. It's completely non-intuitive, doesn't make any sense at all, so easy to mask and such. We're really hoping that they fix this sooner rather than later. The Better Together over Ethernet client, which is the click to call. We're still waiting for a stable release to come out. And the nice to have had some functionality that we're really looking for is the automatic failover from one data center to another. Right now, if one data center fails, people actually have to reboot the phone before it fails over to the out of the data center. PIN authentication for a calendar, so you're not punching your password on a dial pad. I have no idea how to do that. My password has numbers and symbols and such. It would take me hours to enter that in there. And of course, the hoteling feature, the ability to actually go into an office and sign in and have that phone stay signed in for the day before actually moving ahead and logging itself out at the end of the day. The only comment I'll talk about this particular slide, you know, the long-term evaluation of redundancy. We built a lot of voice redundancy into this system because we wanted to take the extra step of caution. Is that something that's absolutely necessary for your organization? Maybe, maybe not. Is that something that we need in our organization? Again, maybe, maybe not. I mean, our contracts are year long, so we'll evaluate whether or not we actually need this level of redundancy after we run the service for a little while. But you know, in Jesse and I talking about it, it's sort of interesting that you know these same questions and the same trepidation happened back 6 years ago when we first moved off of our voicemail system and moved onto Exchange UM. Is Microsoft stable enough to be running this environment? You know. Or not, and as it turns out, we have actually better resiliency using Exchange UM than our old system there. So we're really hoping that that we're just being paranoid, and that as we use our existing DR technologies and stuff, we'll be able to really tune back some of the needs for redundancy. What scares us still? Dial tone expectations. There's some tolerance that your computer needs to reboot periodically. There's zero tolerance. You pick up the phone, there has to be dial tone on the other end. The patching Jesse has talked about and the break fix timelines. And we'll just see whether or not simply utilizing the DR and BC technologies through virtualization and stuff will be enough for us to do it without additional SLAs and third-party agreements. So lessons learned. What have we learned from all this? Well, the key thing is this needs to really be a phone project and not a link server project. You got to focus on the user experience and the change management issues. I talked a little bit about mobility already. Stress again, change management, it's not about the technology, but how the technology is embraced by a user's workflow and helping them really understand what's in it for them, the benefits there. Focus on core dial tone. For us, PRI and SIP, it was natural to do, but it's an arm's length project. We actually fought our VAR on this in terms of we wanted to roll it in at the same time. And no, you want to keep this separate. And in hindsight, that absolutely does make sense. Really talk up the Phone Plus features so that people understand why they're giving up something that they're very familiar with for something that is new and unknown to them. Those wow sessions are actually very important. When you pilot, don't pile it with the techies. Don't pile it with the ones that say, I really want to try this. In fact, you want to go and find the people who's like, I don't know if I really want to do this. I'm perfectly happy with the technology, because if you can get them to buy into it and you can get them to say, yes, this works well, then it's going to work for the rest of the population out there. Make sure as you roll in each office, you find key supporters. You find people who have a vested interest in the success, who will talk to their peers about it. So it's not just IT talking to a partner, and that's not IT talking to an office manager. It's actually a peer-to-peer discussion to actually push that through. And the key thing is, again, set the expectations for mobility early so that people understand the benefits. But the reality now is people do that now, in that landlines are 99.99% reliable. Cell phones aren't. We all wandering around, can you hear me now? Hold on a second, I'm going into an elevator. I'm going into a tunnel. It's matching the same expectations now to say that it's the same fundamental cell phone that you're using. So understand that it's not going to be 100% resilient and reliable. So one question that I wanted to toss out here before we open it up is, you know, I wanted to actually put it in the slide deck, but Microsoft took it out, is simply, if we were to do this again, would we still go down the path of Link? And, you know, of course, Microsoft asked the question, well, what's the answer? Like, I'm not telling you. we're going to tell everybody right here, right now. And, you know, would we do it all over again if we started again now? The answer now is absolutely yes. Why? Because of really three key things. One, it was a Link mobile, it's a Link 2013 mobile client that really brought the VoIP there. You know, for all the talk as to what the functionality, that was the client that really made it for us. The handset functionality, which was a must-have for us, 85% there, that's close enough for us to do. The announcements that happened today at the keynote in terms of the video server, in terms of the integration with Skype, all that functionality would bring it that if we were making the decision right now, it'd be a slam dunk. It's just unfortunate it's taken us a few years to actually make the journey to where we are now. Questions? We got Skype cards. Go ahead. The question was, is do we use any cost recovery? And yes, we actually do use cost recovery systems and such. And really what we're doing is, because the cost of long distance is really driving to zero, we're using that as a part of a wow session, that we're actually going to stop charging for domestic long distance calls. We use least cost routing and everything. So, I mean, there's really no cost to us. And we're using that as a benefit, that you're not entering, you know, up to 20 digits, a rocket launch code in order to make a long distance phone call. Right. Right, so it's a non-issue for us, but a peer firm of mine, and we can talk about this offline if you like, has actually engaged a reseller to actually develop a client that actually has a little pop-up that actually allows you to do a client matter lookup and still have that click-to-call functionality. Yeah, so the question is that connectivity dashboard that I mentioned. It was in-house developed, and hey, it's simple ping and latency time. So it's just a simple interface where it's a traffic light, green good, red bad, yellow, it's sort of okay. And it's actually based on tier levels. And it does pinging, so it actually figures out which gateway you should be going to, whether it's East Coast, West Coast type thing. We're looking at setting up a European gateway so that, you know, when people are over there, it automatically goes there. And it's just a simple dashboard of lights to say that, you know, if webmail is working, green light, well, that's the most basic connectivity you have. And it goes up higher with then Citrix, and then voice, and then video. And it just gives you the choice of options that are available for you to use. Again, taking the mystique away from it, so we're not teaching users how to ping or how to actually read ping time latency. So it's just a simple interface that goes there. We're developing a little bit more where there's actually a button that can then email the information to our help desk, so that from a troubleshooting perspective, it bounces right back to the help desk. We can see that, yes, you're trying to make a voice call, but you can see the dashboard's red. It's not going to work.
You mentioned Citrix and data synchronization. Are you using a thin client solution with Blink?
the question is, are we using a thin client solution with Link? We have thin clients available. It's not directly tied in with Link. And you want to talk about Link within Citrix, what we're doing there?
Yeah, so we aren't supporting it within there. Obviously, we have the Citrix the Link client in there already, so people can IM and do that. But we don't want voice calls going through it because we don't have support for it. And Arvar actually helped us find a way to block people from being able to answer the call, because I actually made that mistake myself. I didn't think about it. I was so used to answering my phone on my computer, and I was logged into Citrix one day at home, and it rang. I tried to answer it, and I couldn't do anything with it, so I just had the call stuck there. So it's something that we are just going to stop from being able to happen. No, we haven't. We saw it, but I think that our Citrix admin had looked at it, and he said it didn't support Macs and some other caveats with it. So our attorneys probably 80% have Macs at home, I think. It's really popular, so it's something we stopped looking at that point.
Are you running Zen app, or are you running
Personal? We're running Zen apps, but we're actually presenting a desktop environment to them.
Yeah.
Any more questions? Russ from Microsoft.
I'm curious, you might talk about the importance of simple user experience for all your internal clients. And you've got the investment in Amber's video today, and you now know that it's going to be able to integrate with the Link server that happens soon, and that's great. But when you look at the new Link Room systems, now the simplicity of walking the room,
well, I'll let Jesse talk about the room systems. He's spent a little bit more time with it. But I mean, the simple reality is that we're already invested in the existing Tambri infrastructure. They're on a lease schedule, and technology always evolves. So as leases expire, we look at how we can continue to further build the foundation that we have.
Sure. And you know, I haven't spent a lot of time with them. I did get to see one in person just last week. It seems nice. It follows a different usage pattern again. So, you know, we really have, as Dean mentioned, like that concierge kind of service. We have a person whose full-time job is to schedule calls, to connect them on the bridge, to make sure that it's working, so they actually call and have somebody walk into the room and they say, "Hi, can you hear me?" You know, do that whole test, because you know our attorneys really don't want to deal with it. They just want to walk into the room and have it work. We've tried that self-service model before with having very integrated Crestron systems. That you touch a button and you can make all this stuff happen, but in reality, it was easy, and they still really didn't want to use it. They still wanted an IT person to come in there and push that button for them. So I'm not sure how much it'll really help. It is nice from an integration point that it's just native Link and you have all those Link features, but we'll see how it goes once we get to that point when our infrastructure is ready to be swapped out.
So we're out of time, but we will be down at the Ask the Experts if anybody has any more questions. We'll stay around here for a little while if anyone has any questions as well. Please fill in the survey. Maybe we'll be back next year to tell you how it all worked as we finish up the full deployment. And those of you who ask questions, come on up and claim your Link card. Thank you very much, everyone.